We're talking with Denise David Williams about her plans to produce a major motion picture about the late Dr. John Mack, a courageous investigator who did what scientists are supposed to do. He followed the evidence where it led, and the place it led was a pretty uncomfortable spot. You can't imagine how many people, well, you can. If you listen to this show, you can imagine how many people react to this alien abduction scenario in a negative way. It can't be true. It's like the kidney doctor that we just heard about at Harvard saying, this can't be true, and therefore it isn't. So you're bringing disrepute to Harvard by even investigating this stuff. Amazing that people who have done no investigation whatsoever, who have not looked at any of the evidence, can tell a guy like Dr. John Mack, who had spoken to, interviewed, done clinical work with hundreds of people all telling basically the same story. The people who don't know the information, know nothing about it, say it can't be true, and they're telling that to the guy who's done the work. That's not the way it's supposed to work. A line I've used for a long time is it's the duty of science and journalism to investigate the unexplained, not to explain the uninvestigated. And that's what Dr. John Mack did. In a moment, we hear about plans to produce this movie about Dr. Mack and his amazing life, a little bit about his unfortunate death, and then we'll be opening up the phone lines with your questions from my guest, Denise David Williams. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Before the break, Denise and I were talking about Dr. John Mack and where his research was headed, namely into a new understanding of reality. There's a quote that I've used in the past that really strikes home with me. It's from Dr. Mack, in which he's talking about advocating what amounts to the ultimate blasphemy, and that is a new concept of reality. He said, taken together, these phenomena tell us many things about ourselves and the universe that challenge the dominant materialist paradigm. They reveal that our understanding of reality is extremely limited. The cosmos is more mysterious than we have imagined. There are other intelligences all about, some of which seem to be able to reach us. Consciousness itself may be the primary creative force in the universe, and our knowledge of the physical properties of the physical world is far from complete. The emerging picture is a cosmos that's an interconnected harmonic web, vibrating with creativity and intelligence, in which separateness is an illusion. Denise, he was a great writer and a courageous guy. I mean, to advocate something like that, a new understanding of reality, he was bound to get into trouble.
Wow, that was so beautiful, what you just read. He was bound to get into trouble the way Galileo got into trouble or Copernicus got into trouble. So, yeah, because we don't like to change. Change is a very slow process. You were saying something before the break that reminded me of this. Even when John had colleagues who had data that could have confirmed what he was saying, they, well, let me tell you the story. Harvard was, one of the things they criticized John about was that he didn't get an opinion from his colleagues at Harvard. So he agreed to go to the psychology department. And there were two young psychology professors there who, and a couple of the abductees agreed to come with John and be tested. So they put an abductee in a booth and they hooked him to electrodes and they read him a happy story, a scary story, a neutral story, and one of their abduction stories. And when they read him the abduction story, his physiological responses measured way off the charts, way more than Vietnam vets, way more than rape victims. And there's one thing in the psychiatric community that is agreed upon, and that is you cannot fake physiological responses to trauma. So they had the data, but these young psychologists, what they said was, we choose to interpret the data differently. Why? Because alien abductions are impossible. There's no way that they could happen. So even when John had some data to confirm what he was saying, his colleagues wouldn't confirm it.
You have any idea where it would have gone? This might be too much of a question for you, but because maybe we can only guess about it. But where his research would have led, I just think about if not, if he hadn't died, how much further along we might be in understanding this stuff, what he would have written by now.
Well, he had kind of, after about 14 years, he found himself basically preaching to the choir. And then 9/11 happened. And so he went back to his some original interests, international conflicts, and so he went in that direction. And then he started studying continued consciousness, which, you know, what happens after death. So who knows where he would have taken it.
Let's talk about your movie. So you convince his family, somehow you convince them, I'm the person to take this story on and I will do it justice. Is the focus of the movie, would it be the Harvard investigation and how he stood up to that?
Well, that would definitely be a large part of it, because that's the central conflict of the story. But it would begin with his studying of, well, first we would see who he was, so we can see the arc of his life through his work. So the beginning is the studying of the abductees and how he transforms, and how Harvard, the conflict he comes up against with Harvard, and then how that changes him and as a result of that conflict and the work.
Are his sons proud of him?
Yeah. His sons are definitely proud of that, proud of him. One son really chose to kind of stand back from the work and from this process, which is understandable. You know, there's still a bit of a sensitivity there.
So you secure the rights, you're excited, you think this is going to be a great movie, you go to Hollywood, and initially you're met with a great deal of enthusiasm, right?
Well, I continue to be met with a great deal of enthusiasm, and there's a lot of interest from companies to tell John's story for a number of reasons. Well, I mean, he's a great protagonist. It's a fascinating subject matter. It's relevant. It's a universal subject. It's a great role for an actor. It's a prestigious kind of a picture. So there is a lot of interest. What I found was that, and I don't fault Hollywood for this because I understand it. They said, "Wow, this is a great story. Thank you. Now give it to us." And 100% just turn it over to us. And there's no way that was going to be an option. I was just not willing to do that. I've already put 7 years into this project. And as I said, my relationship with the family, with John's colleagues and friends, and with abductees all around the world really reinforces the fact that I need to shepherd this project, that I'm the one that gave my word to all of those people, and I need to be, you know, a force in the development of it.
Yeah,
not
you made a promise
force.
About how it was going to be handled. You signed it over. There's no telling. Next, they have dancing girls and alien monsters eating people, and who knows what else.
Exactly, and believe me, I heard some takes on the story that were, you know, bumping up against that a bit. So. Yeah.
Tell me about Robert Redford. You said, I read that he had his production company or both were very interested in this. And for months you were working with them.
Yeah, I actually had partnered with them for 14 months and we, spent time looking for a writer and talking about the story. And, I actually ended up walking away from that partnership because we had a disagreement over the direction of the film, and so they asked me for 100% creative control, and I said, no, that's not possible. That's what we were just talking about. It just was not possible. So I left that partnership.
That's too bad. Redford would have made a good Dr. Mack. Have you taken it then to other studios and gotten the same sort of a treatment in that we want total control?
Yeah. I've talked to other, you know, big companies and who love it. I mean, I wish that, you know, literally someone said to me, God, I wish this was that I owned the rights to this. So, you know, just give, thank you for bringing us this story. Now give it to us.
And go away.
And go away.
William Shatner. I heard that William Shatner was interested.
Wow, George. You got your ear to the ground. That's correct. He was.
And the same kind of thing. He, yes, give me the story, or you can't say.
Yeah, yeah, same kind of thing. Actually, oh. The truth is he'd never heard of John Mack until I had a meeting with him. So, and then he was so taken with the story, he said, you know, God, I wish I owned this. And but again, he doesn't.
Well, listen, we have a lot of listeners in Hollywood. I hope someone is taking some notes right now. Her name is Denise David Williams. We've got contact info and links to her website on the webpage, and someone should offer you a reasonable deal. Where does it go from here? You've decided to try to make it on your own, to raise your own money?
Well, yeah, for now, what we've done is we've decided to raise development money through crowdfunding. And what that will enable us to do is develop the script in-house so that we can tell the story, you know, the way we've been talking about it. And I know how to develop a script. My whole career has been devoted to working with writers and developing material. So we've decided to since this is a story really for everyone and about everyone, and this is a story that affects all of us, I thought it was perfectly reasonable to ask people to help us develop the script. At that point, when we have the material the way we want it, we'll go back to a studio, we'll go back into the mainstream of Hollywood and take it from there and do, I envision, a major motion picture. So, but for this phase of the film, we are taking it, raising the money independently.
Well, we have links again on our website. I hope people will check it out if you're interested in being a part of this. I worry that somebody might just steal it, make up a character who's like John Mack and just go ahead and make a movie without you. That happens,
well,
doesn't it, in your business?
Yeah, it's possible someone could do a story based on public domain material, but they wouldn't have the support of the community or John Mack's family or his friends or the incredible part of the rights that we have are all of his personal and professional archives.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What's in that?
Well, his unpublished manuscript called When World Views Collide, which is his personal accounting of the Harvard debacle, which is it's fascinating. They granted us the clinical sessions, the tapes, and the transcriptions of John's work with abductees.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and then those abductees gave us permission to use them.
How much of that stuff have you listened to?
A lot.
It's pretty, it's moving, isn't it?
It's incredibly emotional and powerful. And very affecting when you hear it. It's very, very visceral. We also have the private tapes of the Harvard investigation, which is incredibly fascinating. So, you know, without that, I'm really not concerned about that habit. I don't think any reputable company would attempt to do this without the life rights.
The manuscript about the Harvard investigation, blow-by-blow account as told by Dr. Mack, was he planning on publishing that?
Yeah. Yes, he was. He hadn't found a publisher yet. And, you know, as we know, he died when he had just completed it, and he was looking for a publisher.
Is there a smoking gun in his papers that you've seen so far? Anything that a wow moment for you where you go, holy cow, this changes everything?
It changes everything in terms of...
Well, I don't know, anything in terms of a finding, any kind of a case that I guess would be proof enough for even his critics.
You know, proof, that's a tough word, and right?
Yeah.
I mean, if we had it, this would be a riddle resolved.
Tell me this, is there anything mysterious about his death? It's tragic for sure, but I know the first thing I thought is that somebody took him out. I mean, he would have been a threat to the worldview of a whole lot of people, and I'm sure that there were people who wished him ill.
I'm sure there were the family. It was considered a drunk driving accident. He was in England, as you know. An American in England tends to look the wrong way when crossing the street, which he did, and it was determined to be a drunk driving accident. And that's what the family's position is, and that's my position as well.
Denise, this is a personal question, but are you an abductee or have you ever seen a UFO? Have you ever had an experience along those lines? I ask it only because this buzzing in your ear that you heard that led you into this bookstore that introduced you to the story, it seems like more than serendipity at work.
I know it does. It really does. And I think it was more than serendipity. I think it was really divinely inspired. George, I was came to the planet with a very highly developed intuition. And when you have that, we all have the potential for that. And John actually talked about that. That was at the basis of what he was saying. He was saying if we utilize our six senses, not just our five senses, that we would begin to be open to this phenomenon. So I've always had a highly developed intuition, and I've had many metaphysical experiences, people who have passed over, all kinds of things. So it's very natural to me. I did have an experience that I really don't think much about. It was very benign. It was really rather sweet. I used to get up at 4:30 in the morning to go hiking. I live in Los Angeles, and it was first light. I was hiking this mountain, and it was foggy out. And all of a sudden, on either side of me were three beings and three beings. And I felt the fear in my body, and I braced myself and just said, "Okay, I don't know if this is real, but the fear was definitely real." And I just extended my hands, and they walked me up the mountain. And when we got to the top, there was something circular, and I guess you would call it a ship. And they got on, and it dissolved. And I swear, if I had to, I really can't say if it was real or not, but it stayed with me, and the feeling of fear stayed with me. So, what was that? I have no clue.
And I guess the question is, if someone had been standing there 50 yards away looking from another angle, what they would have seen.
Exactly.
And that goes to the heart of the mystery. Some of Dr. Mack's colleagues, Bud Hopkins for one, David Jacobs for another, in particular David Jacobs, came to believe that this experience was very dark, that the other entities, whoever they are, wherever they're from, are not here for our good. They're here for their good, and humans be damned. I know that Dr. Mack gave a lot of put a lot of faith in the beliefs of Bud Hopkins and to some extent Dave Jacobs, but their views came to diverge. Did you ever have you seen anything that he's written or anything in his papers about the motives of the visitors of these other entities that we interact with, whether he was touchy-feely positive about the whole thing, or whether he recognized that there might be some dark motives at work here.
Actually, he said both were possible. He said if you did a literal interpretation that there's a threatening scenario that the aliens have an agenda of, perhaps colonization of Earth for selfish purposes. But that was a possibility, and that was the David Jacobs, Bud Hopkins position, as you said. But he also said that an interdimensional view is a more complex way to understand human consciousness and spiritual evolution. So he said both is possible. That one of the reasons that they're coming here is to help us save our planet. Another might be to save their planet. And the bottom line is we really don't know. But John did take a higher view of it, a lighter, more spiritual view of it than other researchers. To me, that's very interesting. and, you know, obviously more positive.
All right. We're talking with Denise David Williams about her plans for a film about Dr. John Mack. In a moment, we open up the phone lines, get your questions and comments as well. We're talking with Denise David Williams about her plans for a film about the late Dr. John Mack. And we're going to find a film partner for her, either that or we'll get the Coast audience to get involved in a crowdsource funding of this film, because it sounds like a movie that needs to be made. When we come back, we'll go to the phones with your questions for my guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. Let's go to the phones and see what's on your mind. Questions for my guest, Denise David Williams, about her Dr. John Mack project. Wildcard Line, Veronica in Ventura, California. Hi, Veronica.
Hi, good evening. Thank you so much for taking my call. Yes, this is filmmaker Veronica Hendricks calling to tell you, Denise, I applaud you so greatly for sticking to your guns and taking the heat and not succumbing to these powerful entities and studios, because we are all going to benefit from it. And I know, like with angels like George and the people at Coast to Coast, you're definitely going to get your funding. You're so well-spoken and passionate. I'm confident. Okay, I have two questions really quick. My first question is, have you experienced any suspicious opposition and, you know, to your endeavors? And my second question is, can I send you a copy of my film? Because I think it will inspire you. It was one of the first, if not the first, documentaries about Morgellons disease. And I did it without any budget, just with the grace of God and people like George to help me. And I think it could inspire you. So I'd like to send you and George a copy of it, if possible. But anyways, just God bless you. And I'm going to be so excited to see your film.
Thank you, Veronica. Thank you so much. That means a lot to me to hear you say that. And I really appreciate your support like that. And sure, my email is on the website, Make Magic Productions. You can send me an email and a copy of your film.
And the first question was whether there's any sort of suspicious opposition, any kind of anyone messing with you behind the scenes.
You know, I really try to keep my attention on the job at hand and stay positive. So I'd have to say no. I'd have to say not that I'm aware of.
Hollywood could sabotage you without it being something even more sinister. They can do it all on their own, can't they?
Well, I suppose so. But Hollywood does a lot of good stuff too. And I am part of that community. So, you know, I don't want to say anything too negative about Hollywood, but
gotcha.
I also feel that this film has a life of its own and that it will find its way because it's meant to be. I really feel that way about it.
I think you're right. Thanks, Veronica. Keith in Rochester, New York. Good morning, Keith.
Yes, I have two questions. One, why can't we reasonably expect, like in the 1951 movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still with Michael Rennie, that after all these centuries, if there really are space people, they could not really land on the White House lawn, extend themselves like John Wayne and say, howdy. If they're really there after all this time, short of landing on the White House lawn, many of us just are not going to really believe them, that they exist, or really care that they do. And secondly, the woman, the guest, mentioned that she'd had different metaphysical experience, all kinds even. Why is it that some of you have these, experiences at the drop of a hat, whereas the rest of us never do? In my case, both of my parents are passed, and even though it may not sound like it, I really left myself open to contact from them. Nothing at all, and both of them have been gone many years now. Really, why is it some of you, it's like you turn around and yet another experience from the beyond, and none of us ever have that? I'd really like to know those two answers.
Thanks,
wow,
Keith.
That is such a good question. And John Mack had the exact same question. He was very despondent over the fact that he himself never had an experience of any kind. So I feel your pain, so to speak, but I honestly don't know what the answer is to that. But you're not alone, because as I said, John Mack asked the same thing.
I know that the first question about why no landing on the White House lawn is one that's asked by people who don't want to believe this to be true. With Keith, I don't know if that's the case for you, but it sure sounded like it. The fact is, we don't know the answer. And whereas these entities or this intelligence, which has shown itself to have technical capabilities far beyond anything that we've got, maybe the answer is, if you were to go to Africa and see mountain gorillas in their natural environment, beings that have no idea about the larger world, would you send an ambassador? Would you send an official party to begin negotiations and officially recognize the mountain gorillas? Or are they too far below you to worry about it? We study those gorillas. We interact with them in ways. We want to take care of them and help them survive. But it doesn't mean we're ready to establish an embassy to negotiate with them. And it could be that these entities, whatever they are so far advanced from us that they don't do it. As for landing on the White House lawn, I think you'd probably find people who, even if that happened, wouldn't want to believe it. Because unless they have an interaction personally themselves with an alien, they're not going to believe it. We do know, however, that UFOs have flown over the White House and over Congress, and there was some famous case from 1952 that was sort of inspiration for one of the movies that Keith just mentioned. Appreciate the call. Paul, who is trucking in Tallahassee on the Wild Card Line. Hi, Paul. What's on your mind?
Good evening. Yes, I just had a question. Earlier in the interview, the nice lady said that Dr. Mack was an atheist. And I'm just wondering, during the course of all this, if that changed his worldview, because the quote you made from his book or whatever was sounded very spiritual, almost mystical in the way you just he described this these occurrences.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Paul. And he completely went from that he was raised in an atheist intellectual home. And by his own description, became an intuitive, heart-based, spiritual man. So he really did a complete 180. And that's huge. But that's what he said the phenomenon would do for all of us if we were able to open up to our sixth sense, start to utilize our intuition, get out of our heads, and into our hearts. That's where he traveled, how he transformed.
That's sort of the essence of his own journey, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate that. East of the Rockies, Bruce in Cleveland. You're on with Denise David Williams.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if the guy ever heard anybody putting up a fight when the alien tried to abduct him and getting away with it.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. As a matter of fact, there's a story in his book, Abduction, where the guy who's being abducted, this guy had been abducted over and over and over again since childhood. And his physical body was paralyzed. But in his mind, he was thinking, if only I could, I would strangle them, literally strangle them if I could move. You can imagine how violated one would feel if something's happening to your physical body and yet you can't fight back. So he was not able to, but the anger and the rage and the impulse to fight back was definitely there.
I know that a couple of the abductee researchers have written about that. It's a very tricky question, but I think there are isolated cases where people have been able to fight it off. I'm not quite sure how exactly what the method was, but I think Dr. David Jacobs has written about that a little bit, and Yvonne Smith, who's an L.A. Experiencer researcher. But thanks for the call, Bruce. Tell me this, Denise, you mentioned about the book, the manuscript is basically done. Is there any appetite on the part of his family to have it published? I would think that somebody would want to publish that.
Yes, but since they've granted it to us for the production, that's not going to happen until after the film.
Right. You'd want to do it in coordination with the film. Sure.
That's right. Yeah.
That makes sense. West of the Rockies, Diana in Irvine, California. Hi, Diana. You're on with Denise.
Hi, first of all, thank you and good evening, guys. And I just had a question. I've always felt like I've been abducted at some point. I don't really have the memories, but I have all the symptoms, and I literally have been stopped by random psychic women on the streets and telling me, you've been abducted, you know something, and I really don't know what to do with this information, and I'm just, I guess, asking for help of, you know, what can I do? I've been dropped on my bed, as they say, you know, when you wake up and you dropped. I've had weird prints on my feet and my hands. Now, I come from a family of doctors where my mom, you know, she's a doctor, and she says, hey, it's medically, you can't prove it. Impossible. So, you know, if you can just kind of guide me of what I can do to find out if I was abducted or not. And that's pretty much my question. And I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I can give you one idea. In your neck of the woods, I mentioned her name a couple of minutes ago, a lady named Yvonne Smith, who has a network there in Southern California of people who've had these experiences. Sometimes the answer might be you get with somebody who's experienced in researching these kinds of cases, and you find out it is not an abduction or not even an alleged abduction. It's something else. But if you, in fact, have had these experiences, anomalous as they are, Yvonne would be a good person to maybe help guide you in getting some answers. And you can find her, just Yvonne Smith. You Google her name there, you'd be able to find her and her organization. It's right there in your neck of the woods. Denise, I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
I was going to say the same thing. I was just with Yvonne yesterday. And Diana, wherever it is that you live, exactly what George is saying, find a hypnotherapist who specializes in this area. Barbara Lamb is another person who does that work. And really, thanks to John Mack, there are more people today that can help you than ever before. So,
yeah, well, Diana is in Irvine, so Yvonne Smith would be in her neck of the woods.
Yeah.
First-time caller, Joseph in Columbus, Ohio. Joseph, hi, welcome to the program. You're on with Denise.
Well, thank you, George. I've been a longtime fan. I used to talk to Art, but I lived in L.A. for 20 years. I lived in Vegas for a few years, too.
Well, you get around.
Well, I have kids and families, but this is such an interesting subject because I've had an encounter of my own, which was face-to-face with, I can't even use the word entity or alien. It was one of these balls of light that millions of people are reporting. But I was with a friend of mine. We were out in the desert in California, and this thing came right up to our faces. And it basically downloaded us. I could feel this interaction occurring. Whatever it was, the intelligence of it or the abilities of it were incredible. It simply downloaded whatever it is we knew, and I could specifically feel that the thing was looking for memories, experiences, and emotions. Wasn't much interested in us physically. I don't think I was abducted. The woman that I was with has been in therapy ever since. These kinds of experiences are pretty traumatic. But my question really is, when it comes to motion pictures or publishing something, this has happened so many times, I think inevitably it's just absolutely true that we're being visited and we're being monitored in some manner. So what's happened to the world? We'd have to make a movie for people to try and believe this. It needs a lot of research.
I'm sorry, Joseph, what was the first part of your question?
Well, the first part of my question is when people are talking about books and movies, and I understand that to try and, you know, get analysis of all this stuff and to get this information out for people interested, hopefully for most people to understand, what's happened to our society that we have to have a movie do it?
Well, movies are very powerful mediums. You know, through entertainment, we are really able to touch hearts and minds of people all over the world. So it's not the only way, but it is a very powerful way to create shifts in the world and to spark a dialogue about something. And I think John Mack's story is the perfect story because of its authenticity and its sincerity and who he was to spark a dialogue. And it's just a very effective medium for touching people.
Yeah, Joseph, it's sort of like, you know, like books like Huckleberry Finn, which was so powerful in changing people's views at the time about slavery and African-Americans. I mean, a popular medium like this can sort of lay the groundwork for future research. You know, it somebody sees it in the movie theater and they become the scientists who cracks open the mystery later on. They're inspired. It makes it more acceptable to go ahead and do this kind of research without fear of ridicule. Because
also,
somebody like, yeah, go ahead.
And I was saying also bring it out of the closet and into the mainstream.
Yeah. Thanks, Joseph. I appreciate that. Dana in Michigan on the wild card line. Hi, Dana. What's on your mind?
Hi. Hi, George. Hi, Denise.
Hi.
I'm glad, Denise, that you said that the doctor did a complete 180 and went from, I have two questions. Did you mean he did a 180 from an atheist to a believer in God or a believer in something? That's one question, because I'm hoping he died believing in something, because otherwise that would make him as closed-minded as Harvard was to him about his research, you know? I never understood that, especially academians or the intellectuals. How could they not, you know, have a belief in God or believe that it is possible? But that's one question. Did he actually believe in God or just something spiritual, a higher power or what? But the other question is, now, you did say he started as an atheist, and he did recognize that maybe they're going to come here, other beings, for good, to help us, or for bad. Did bad include, because you said he did a 180, and I don't know what the answer is, if he believed in God. Have you or did he ever entertain the fact that these might be not Satan himself, but his minions? Because the 64,000, is it Mr. Marzulli's been on this program before?
Hey, Dana, we're running out of time here. I'm going to let Denise answer those. Thanks. Thank you.
Well, basically, Dana, yes, correct. He started out as an atheist, and yes, he did have a spiritual awakening. His heart opened and his intuition opened, and he became connected to something greater than himself. And so whatever that greater creative source is, some people call it God, some people call it universal consciousness, whatever it's called, it's very individual, but yes, he evolved through this process.
He didn't see it as satanic, right?
No, he did not.
Denise, I want to thank you for being our guest. Do you have a title for your movie?
John Mack.
What you'd like to call it? John Mack?
John Mack, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good name.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
Yeah.
Good feeling for it. Well, we wish you the best of luck. I hope people will click on the link and check out what you're doing. And maybe we've got a producer there in Hollywood or a studio executive who is looking for a good project and has heard the show, and we'll get in touch with you.
And if people go to johnmackmovie.com, they can read more about it and, you know, help us out. We surely appreciate it.
You're not going to quit until this is made, and made in a way that would do honor to his memory and be acceptable to his family as well.
And serve the world.
Serve the world. Meaning, and how? What would be the good outcome for you?
The good outcome would be that it would spark a dialogue, a real dialogue, about the possibility that we are not alone in the universe. I think it's time that come into the mainstream and that we have a sincere conversation about it.
Denise Williams, thank you very much. Best of luck with your project. I hope you'll keep me informed. Let me know what goes on, and maybe from time to time we can update it.
Thanks so much, George. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Stick around, everyone. Our next guest, Robbie Graham, continues our conversation, broadens it a little bit about Hollywood's fascination with aliens, UFOs, things of that sort. Is there something else going on here? Right after this on Coast to Coast AM.